So I'm going to talk today about type 2 compactifications with torsion and flux and supersymmetry breaking in this context. I think there's something in the subject for everyone to hate, including me. And therefore, my hope is that if Shankar's theorem applies, then we will all have to deal with it. So I'll start by way of a very brief introduction to just remind people a few basic things about how we describe soft terms in supersymmetric low energy effective theories and the particular class of string realizations of these theories I'll be talking about. I'll then embark on a review of D equals 4 type 2 models. In particular, I'll talk about Clausius compactifications, which have n equals 2 SUSY, and the addition of fluxes and torsion. And at this one point, I will define more precisely what I mean by torsion. Then I'll talk in particular about type 2V models and supersymmetry breaking. In particular, I'll be able to describe more precisely how different kinds of fluxes and torsion break supersymmetry by identifying them with auxiliary fields and various supermultiplets for closed strings. And then if I have time, which would shock me, I'll talk about world sheet instantons. And finally, this, and then if I have still more time, I'll babble some more. Much of this is contained in one paper, which is hopefully coming out soon by myself, Ruben Manasian, Tobias Sander, who is my graduate student, Mike Schultz at UPenn, and Ryan Wecht at MIT, and then some older work by myself and John McGreevy from a couple of years ago. And 233, oops. This is in some sense a completion of work that was done in this paper, or in those two papers. OK. So by way of introduction, and this is more for any string theorist in the audience who might have been as uneducated as I was about this a few years ago. Let me talk about how, in general, we write down explicit soft SUSY breaking in some model like the supersymmetric standard model. The basic point is that to get a realistic spectrum, the supersymmetry breaking terms must be explicit in the supersymmetric standard model sector alone. And you also want them to be soft in the sense that they are supersymmetry is broken by relevant operators so that you recover all the nice ultraviolet properties of the supersymmetric theory. And in this, Ghirardello and Grisseroux show that these can be organized by treating the couplings in the n equals 1 action as superfields, sometimes called spurions. And so to see how this works, it's just easiest to mention a couple examples. So my spurion superfield will typically have a scalar component and then some F-term, and an expectation value for this F-term will correspond to a coupling which breaks supersymmetry. So the kinds of things you get are gauge genome masses, where I start with the following Lagrangian, say tau trace W alpha. W alpha, W is a chiral Fermi superfield in four dimensions containing, whose bottom component is the Gugino, and then there'll be the higher term includes the gauge field strength. And if I replace tau with a superfield whose lowest component is tau, and which has a non-vanishing F term, I plug this back into my Lagrangian and expand out in F sub tau. And when I make this replacement, this term here appears, and this theta squared is soaked up by the measure, and I get a term which corresponds to a Gugino mass that breaks supersymmetry. And it should be clear at this point, since nothing I've done is not gauge invariant, it won't be giving a mass to the gauge field this way. And you can do a similar thing for, say, squark masses. If I have some quark superfield, I start with the kinetic term L coming from a Kähler potential, theta z theta over q. And once again, I take z to the 1/2 and I write it down in terms as the bottom component of a chiral superfield. And I write the Lagrangian in this case as d4 theta dagger phi q dagger q. And once again, I expand out in theta squared. And this goes to L Suzy plus fc squared q dagger q, giving me a squark mass. And finally, there are terms which come from the superpotential, which contribute to the A terms of the MSSM. So imagine I have a superpotential like this, involving some set of chiral superfields. I let lambda go to lambda plus theta squared aijk, and L again goes to L Suzy plus some in this case cubic scalar potential term. And in this context, the typical story for how these arise is that I have some hidden sector with some set of fields. I have the visible sector, which might contain my quark superfields, Higgs superfield, gauge bosons, and some messenger which couples the two and induces terms like this after integrating out the messengers, and the messengers could be gravity or some fields which are charged under the standard model in gauge mediation or whatever. What I'm going to be talking about today, the kinds of soft terms I'm going to talk about today is in fact the explicit identification of these soft terms when phi are closed string fields. And the reason I'm going to do that is the following. I'm thinking of a class of some sort of local type, some type 2 compactifications with D brains which sit at points or on submanifolds of my compactification manifold. Let's use to illustrate that here. Here is my compactification manifold. It's a cartoon of a Clavial I have some brains here sitting at a point, maybe wrapping some cycles, some other brains sitting at a point and wrapping cycles. Here is where the degrees of freedom of the MSSM would sit. And over here, I would have some D brains which might have gauge dynamics, for example, which breaks supersymmetry. And these two sectors should talk to each other via not only 4D gravity, but various 10D modes, fluxes, and so on. And so to understand what the supersymmetry breaking terms here look like, you need to understand how supersymmetry is broken and what fields get sourced so that I communicate supersymmetry breaking to the visible sector. Now, this is not the only or necessarily even the best way to set up a model of supersymmetry breaking, this covers a wide class of scenarios that I'd like to understand further. With engaged mediation, you wouldn't be worrying about these effects so much.
A minor remark about your very coherent summary of the soft terms. I mean, by the same mechanism, you can generate non-holomorphic scalar finite terms, which historically people ignore because Giardella and Grisaru dismissed them as not being soft, but they're only not soft if they're a gauge singlets. You know, you can have them, and they are.
They would fit in this framework. Excellent. Good. Thanks. Okay. So in.
What if you have a local Susie model in a space that breaks into the little scale with curvature and convexity? Mm-hmm. If the model that could mimic supersymmetry.
Essentially, that's what things are going to look like at the end, that I'll have some local model here with some open string degrees of freedom, which looks supersymmetric. I might model it by some non-compact Clavier here, and it's going to be the deviations of this from being Clavier because of fluxes, because of torsion, and so forth, which breaks supersymmetry, which appear as the soft terms. So I think that fits into what you're saying, unless I'm missing.
Right, I'm wondering if you could go one step further and not even insist that it be
I think it will, in the sense that, I mean, that's in some sense what I have in mind here, because these things are localized, this thing is localized as a point, the open string degrees of freedom. Well, okay, so the way this, right.
I'm just saying,
that's quite possibly true. Right. What I am going to ask is, at least locally for fields which couple here, I can organize the couplings. I can write down the couplings as depending on close string modes, which at least lie in multiplets, n equals 1 multiplets, even if supersymmetry is not preserved. So that's the part I'll need.
So you've got scales. So if you, I guess if you have some breaking by like some effective example, put some freedom to be broken at KK scale.
Right.
It depends on being able to do that.
So in some way. Right. If that's true, somehow the couplings have to organize themselves in ways that they look roughly like, you know, some n equals 1 coupling and some soft terms, but it might be hard to produce that from, but in that sense you're saying that even though supersymmetry wasn't restored here, by some miracle things sort of arranged themselves down here. Right. Right. They could well be soft, and then I could write it down in the low energy effective action. I can write it down, you know, as some theory for the. Well, let me actually just write down the theory I have in mind, and then we can. Well, let me just write down what I was going to write down next, and then.
What would you expect from the degree of suppression?
Let's So what I have in mind, and then we can... Okay. So what I had in mind was some low energy effective action, essentially for the open string dynamics where all of the couplings depend on closed string fields, and then I just work out the auxiliary components of the closed string fields. Now it could be, I haven't thought about what the way you've just said things, but it could be that it's just miraculous that these couplings are nicely symmetric with some small terms, but it would be very hard to derive these from some supersymmetric effective action for the closed string modes. But I haven't thought about it. Right. Now, I should also say that in the long run, there's no guarantee that when I turn on an auxiliary field, these will really be soft, because you know all of these things can have higher dimension operators and things like that. But, I'm going to say nothing about building actual models and what it looks like. I'm just going to assume that that this framework is reasonable for now. One way it might act is as a avenue to critiquing various models of this kind, which I suspect will generically have flavor problems, but I'd like to make that statement precise. That's true. Or if you evade it, you can talk about how it evades it in a much more complete framework. So the point here is that this is the kind of model I get if the gauge dynamics and some of the closed strings are localized here, the other closed strings will appear as essentially non-dynamical couplings at low energies. And precisely this, once I identify what this is, and the VEVs for these will be, from the point of view of this local model, just set by boundary conditions, I can then go on and try to compute what the action is here. That's the fantasy. And it's not completely fantastic, certainly for D-brains on Calabi-Yau's. This term in particular, these terms and these terms are typically not too difficult to compute. Actually, they're non-normalization theorems for this term. Some more restricted ones for this term. And there's restrictions on what closed strings modes can couple and type two models and so forth. So at any rate, our goal is to identify F sub phi with specific features of the theory on M6, in particular fluxes and what I'll call intrinsic torsion. And the one thing in these local models is before I start turning on fluxes and torsion, in these local models where things look like D-brains sitting at singular points of some Calabi-Yau, then the closed string modes naturally organize themselves into n equals 2 supermultiplets. So it's actually going to be natural for me. So what I'm going to actually do is start with just a Calabi-Yau compactification and write down the closed strings in n equals 2 supermultiplets and identify those auxiliary terms. If I project out some part of the n equals 2 supermultiplet, get an n equals 1 multiplet, then I similarly just throw out the associated auxiliary fields. Okay.
This picture here, is this similar or the same as the picture that Valeria was talking about? You have warp,
I'm not talking about warping in this context. That's something else you'd have to add. If it's a club, I'm starting with D-brains on a Calabi-Yau. Without the D-brain, it would be n equals 2. And the D-brains break n equals 2 to n equals 1. And again, this isn't the most general. I mean, in principle, I really have to take warping into account. I have to worry about over-manifolds and things like that. Tiny steps for tiny minds. So I want to say some things about type 2 compactifications down to 4 dimensions. And I want to start with a closed string theories with n equals 2 spacetime supersymmetry. I can add the D-brains later. and I will. So just by way of background, and actually some of this, I'll highlight aspects of this which are important for describing fluxes and torsion. I'm starting with some 10-dimensional compactification. I'm going to assume that this is, well, this is some Clausius manifold. In particular, I'm going to start without any torsion. There are some torsionful compactivications with n equals 2 spacetime supersymmetry. Talk about those yet. The point is that with n equals 2 supersymmetry, n equals 2 supersymmetry is given to you if there exists a covariantly constant spinner eta plus in on M6, then plus eta minus, which is the conjugate of eta plus. Once I'm given this covariantly constant spinner, I can decompose 10-dimensional supersymmetry transformations in the following way. So for example, in type 2b, which is mostly what I'll be talking about today, I can write down the 10-dimensional equals, I can write down the two 10-dimensional spinners for 10-dimensional n equals 2 in terms of a 4-dimensional spinner plus cross eta minus 4 plus eta. And so using this covariantly constant spinner, I can write down a 10-dimensional spinner, which will generate supersymmetry transformations that are preserved by the Clausius background. This ends up implying that M is Kähler and Ricci flat. And from this spinner, I can construct a holomorphic free zero form omega, which is proportional to eta bar minus gamma ijk eta plus. This is the anti-symmetrized version of 3 6-dimensional gamma matrices, and such that d omega is 0. And then there's a 1-1 form, non-degenerate 1-1 form j, which is proportional to gamma ij bar eta plus minus, such that dj is equal to 0. And it's useful both to, this is useful actually in the n equals 2 compactifications in describing deformations of the Clausius, as long as the the deformations deform these but keep this these basic features, then I'm guaranteed that I've still got a Clausius compactification. And later when I add torsion, I'll change some of these conditions in very particular ways. That's not my goal. My goal is basically just to work out what various, my goal is essentially to work out how the various closed string excitations of the theory break supersymmetry further and understand the pattern of breaking supersymmetry. At tree level, D-brains on Clausius will give you a particular set of soft terms which are so constrained. But at least from this end, it might be that I have to generalize this story in that ways, but at least I have a starting point. At this point and for this talk, I don't want to make any specific claims about how specific patterns of supersymmetry breaking will arise. Yeah, that's right. So the other thing is the moduli of this Clausius correspond to plot directions in the low energy effective action, and I can describe them. There are two classes, and each type, these are 2A. The Kähler moduli lie in vector multiplets in type 2A and hypermultiplets in type 2B, and they can be described by taking a basis of this double cohomology group. So these are, this is a basis essentially up to cohomology of closed closed forms with one holomorphic and one anti-holomorphic index. And I can write down the linear combination as T plus I P A I J bar. This is the NS two-form potential. And at present, I'm looking at compactifications without flux. I can also think of there's a different set of coordinates on the space on the Kähler moduli in which these are volumes of holomorphic two cycles. So there's sort of a nice geometric picture of what this class of moduli are. The second type are the complex structure moduli. And again, I have in 2A, these are hypermultiplets. In 2B, these are vectors. And if gamma I is a basis, I, J, K bar is a basis of H21, then I can write delta I gamma I. There's also the 4D dilaton, which is a hyperinvert. I can also think of these roughly as volumes of three cycles. There's a geometric picture for these guys as well. Any questions so far? And I should mention, the next step, is to, so far all I've got here are some abelian vector multiplets and hypermultiplets, no chirality, no gauge dynamics, and a natural way to add both of those is to add D-brains into the story. And so I want to consider I want to consider D-brains which fill out the four-dimensional macroscopic spacetime. So the world volume will be R31 times some collection of cycles, which will minus 3 equal to D. And I have P is even in 2A and odd in 2B. And there are further restrictions to get N equals 1 supersymmetry, worked out by Becker, and Strominger, and also by Uguri, Oz, and Yin, more directly in string theory. For 2A, for type 2A to get N equals 1 supersymmetry, this has to be a three-dimensional submanifold, and it also has to be a special Lagrangian, or slag if you want to annoy Greg Moore. Which means that the Kähler form restricted to the three manifold vanishes, and the imaginary part of the sum phase, any phase I choose, times the 3-0 form vanishes. Which phase I choose basically tells me what n equals 1 subgroup of n equals 2 I have left. For 2b, I have sigma 0, 2, 4, 6. This cycle has to be holomorphic. I can also have gauge bundles living on this cycle, which are holomorphic. And the cycle has to be stable in some sense. In four dimensions, this corresponds, the holomorphicity basically tells you that my theory satisfies F-term constraints. The stability condition amounts to saying that the theory satisfies D-term constraints. So there's a precise mapping between these mathematical notions and physical notions.
Well, over here, there's also this possibility that Anton points out of coisotropic D-brains. Is that completely irrelevant here?
No, it's probably not completely relevant. I'm just not going to. One should probably include those two. I just wanted, part of the point of saying this quite explicitly is, among other things, I wanted to show that here, the gauge coupling of such brains depends on the volume of the 3-cycle, which is a complex structure modulus or a hyper in 2A. And here, the gauge coupling is a volume of a 2-cycle, which is Cayley modulus and a hyper in 2B. I wanted to make that fairly clear. And then you would have to, I haven't thought about the coisotropic story at all, but it should be thought about. And just to get an idea of the spectrum, here's my cartoon of some set of intersecting brains. So there's n of these, there's m of these. And brains which begin and end on sigma 1 will typically give you a un gauge symmetry and adjoints. Here I'll get um, also some adjoints. And here I get phi fundamentals nm bar, which can give you a chiral spectrum. And we can, in this context, we can often compute to a fair degree of accuracy the gauge coupling and how it depends on tau closed and the superpotential couplings. And in particular, at tree level, you can show that the gauge coupling depends only on the closed string modes which descended from hypermultiplets. So they're basically the complex structure moduli in 2A. Cayley moduli in 2B, and that's basically just related to the volume of the cycles that the brains wrap. These you can show for scalar multiplets, you can show that these superpotential couplings to all orders in string perturbation theory depend only on the vector multiplets. This is proven in papers by Mike Douglas and then myself and John McCreevy. So this makes it useful. These facts often make it. In fact, these are often the result of doing some computation in topological string theory, and you can often get some exact results for this part. Okay, now to the point. Which is looking at closed string modes which break the n equals 2 spacetime supersymmetry. So let me first talk about torsion. In general, I can consider deformations such that this spinner is everywhere non-vanishing. It's at every point on the Clavio, if I think of this as this is a singlet under the SU3 subgroup of the SO6 structure group of the manifold. But it's not covariantly conserved. So what this means is that fields will still transform under these supersymmetries. But those supersymmetries will no longer be symmetry. So these supersymmetry transformations, but Well, more precisely, actually, the fields will transform under these transformations, but they'll no longer be real symmetries of the low energy theory.
But isn't this saying that the energy rate plot is so real for the effective?
That's right. So that's the point. So all, and first I'll talk about torsion, but all of these things will allow for a supersymmetric effective action, but it won't necessarily describe a supersymmetric vacuum. And the point is that, I mean, those words make it very natural to consider soft deformation, such deformations as somehow being auxiliary multiplets of the existing closed string, in the existing closed string superfields. I give them those. Everything can be described in a supersymmetric way, but supersymmetry is going to be broken because, you know, the fermion partners of here will have some, will transform under some shift. I'm relaxing an assumption. I'm assuming that it's not covariantly conserved.
Yeah, okay, but the second, the singlet vector assumption.
Oh, I don't know off the top of my head whether one flows from the other or not. And I should, but I don't. I'm sure there's a story. Yeah, essentially. I mean, the point is that I can describe this in a way which is somehow, in some sense, a deformation of the underlying Clausius, Friedrichs Clausius, as Alan called it. And so you'd be assuming that in some sense H flux is a reasonably small deformation, and in which case it makes sense to write down the n equals 2 effective action and write down these deformations as being auxiliary fields. If it's not small, then you know you can do it. If the deformation isn't small, you would have to do that for every single Kaluza-Klein field in the theory. Right. I haven't added quantization in yet, and that story for torsion is... Well, and I drew a compact manifold, and I have compact manifolds in mind, but probably most of this makes, I mean, to first order, it's probably best to think of local models where I can sensibly turn on H-flux by a little bit, or torsion by a little bit. And then we can talk about whether you can think of, in a compact model, torsion or H-flux as a deformation by going through some domain wall or something like that. I haven't added the Urey manifold in.
Let me just add, so what you're assuming here, basically, just an SU3 structure, or are you assuming?
I'm assuming an SU3 structure.
Just an SU3.
That's really what I need. That's really what I need. I just wasn't going to say those words, because we're a mixed company and all. Okay. So the point is that since I have this spinner, I can still write down a 3-form and a 2-form like that. So I can still write down. My omega is n bar minus gamma n n p theta plus p j, and n is omega bar gamma n n omega. And also, in general, I'm going to have an almost complex structure, but not a complex structure. So I can write, at any given point, I can write these down as 3, 0, and 1, 1, but that property won't necessarily be preserved from point to point. And furthermore, these are no longer closed, and it's the what I'm going to call torsion are the things which parameterizes the deviation of these from being closed. So in particular, I'll write this. At least, I believe this decomposition is due to a pair of mathematicians named Kiyosaki and Solomon. And in this d omega, as a piece proportional to j wedge j, a piece which is some new 2-form wedge j, and then the 4-form w5. And in fact, this will never make an appearance in the compactifications I'll be talking about. They don't appear as, I haven't yet found this as an auxiliary partner of any of the supermultiples I'm talking about. So presumably it's there somewhere. And then, I apologize for the funny factors, but that's how something up here. So these classes describe what's called intrinsic torsion. And in particular, I'll just note if omega 1, 2 are not 0, the manifold is half flat. If you've seen papers on compactifications on half flat manifolds, this is what it means. OK, and of course, there are other ways to break n equals 2. And since we all, presumably at this point, have heard lots of talks on KKLT, the other way to do it is by adding fluxes. So in both 2a and 2b, I have the NSNS3 form. And I can decompose it in the same way. Sorry, H. I'm going to do this again. It's 3 plus H4. And for 2b in particular, I can decompose F the same way, F1, omega, and so on. For 2a, which I will say less about, I have other forms, including massive deformations of 2a. And the KKLT essentially involves turning on H3, H4, F3, and F4. And I'll talk about the line in a minute.
Mm-hmm. On the flux side, 2a and 2b on a Clavienne are not barycentric, in the sense that if 2a on a Clavienne is not barycentric, 2b on a Clavienne, vice versa.
Right.
On the geometric side, it looks like you have symmetric data on the two sides here.
Yeah, so I think that so the way that the mirror symmetry works out is highly non-obvious. If mirror symmetry exists, which it might, it will map torsion classes of type W3 and W4 to torsion classes of type W1 and W2. They don't even match up in terms of SU3 structure. But there are some arguments that this might work.
And just counting the parameters then works between the two sides? You can count H1s and H2s and so forth.
Yeah, it probably should. The number of parameters should probably fit. But actually, I don't know. I haven't done that off the top of my head. There's a sort of lower order issue with mirror symmetry before you get there, which is what involves world shielding sometimes, but that's as far as I've gotten. It's not at all, I mean, as you say, it's not at all clear that mirror symmetry should exist. This usually breaks the world sheet supersymmetry very badly, and I don't know what mirror symmetry necessarily means anymore.
When there are some classes missing, there are some derivation symptoms in mirror symmetry. You don't have Clavienne anymore.
Most of these will kill the Clavienne. I don't know off the top of my head. So, there are already issues with these mirrors of things that we know. And I think there's an out for those, which just involve taking world sheet and syntons into account.
Are some stupid examples like nil-manifolds in this class? You can describe them in terms of these.
So there's this paper, there's this stuff that Tomasiello and company did, and I don't know yet. An example of things in this, things with W3 and W4 with some associated H-flux would be things like the Maldacena Nunez solutions of NS5 grains wrapping two cycles. With H and F, of course, they're just GKP type solutions. And for W1 and W2, I don't know if this thing by Manesian and Grania, this last long paper on twisted tori, presumably fall into this class, and I don't know how that lines up yet, because we're still just finally starting to understand these things.
Is it favorable?
Should be, yeah. Yeah. As long as there's an SU3 structure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, 16 manifolds that are in spin. We were not third.
Are you sure that singlet always exists?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I didn't know that.
No. So the existence of the dimension 3 structure, I believe, is trivial in 6 dimensions.
It's not going to matter for the rest of this talk, so why don't we shave off to the...
Physically, it'd be surprising because you'd be saying every manifold emits an N equals...
to effective action.
Well, I broke in with broken...
Right. These don't have to be small, it's true. And then you'd have to worry, to really get everything right, you'd have to worry about the auxiliary partners of all the Clutha-Klein power. Right. I don't know off the top of my head. It should matter for everything I'm going to say now. So what I want to say, I expect you can always write things down in terms of an n equals 2 effective action by starting from 10 dimensions, just picking an n equals 2 subgroup of the full type 2B supersymmetry, decomposing the entire Clutha-Klein tower in terms of all of this. There will be all sorts of fields that I turn on. They won't just be these. There'll be other auxiliary components of massive Clutha-Klein things and stuff like that. Right. Right, and then it's not a 4D effective theory. So if there's a 4D effective theory, I think this is roughly what you'll get. So the first thing I have to do to talk about these fluxes as auxiliary fields in these n equals 2 supermultiples, so I don't have to, but I'm going to write down an n equals 2, write down the various multiplets in terms of n equals 2 superfields. Now, the general subject of n equals 2 superspace is a horrible and complicated one, and I'm not going to talk about harmonic superspace or projective superspace or anything like that. I'm going to cheat. And there's a variant done by DeWitt and Van Fulton, Guru et al., and this was embedded into string theory in a paper by Berkowitz and Siegel. It was inspired by one of Berkowitz's hybrid formalisms, which I'll also say nothing about. But the point is that perturbative string theory compactifications, and I admit this is a caveat. Perturbative string, and actually, this just reminded me. I mean, I'm missing deformations here, which include the dilaton. So that's one variant of this that I haven't talked about. With the very dilaton varying inside the quadrilateral, and you obviously have to take that into account. So the basic point is that if I have n equals 2, d equals 4 in a perturbative string context implies n equals 2 comma 2 world sheet Susie.
Seven variants,
for example, yeah. For example. When I have models of this kind, I can write down a holomorphic operator, an anti-holomorphic operator, each of which generate an n equals 1 Susi. And taken together, these form an SU2, a doublet under the SU2R symmetry of n equals 2 spacetime supersymmetry. And so inspired by this, I'm going to write a superspace. I'm going to write a theta hat. This is an SU2 doublet of n equals 1 superspace variables. So I don't have necessarily manifest SU2R symmetry. SU2R symmetry would rotate left and right movers into each other and be rather non-perturbative. But I can certainly expand my fields in this sort of bastardized superspace. Yeah, probably by Antonov's. Okay, so first let me talk about n equals 2 vector multiplets. These are superfields which are chiral from the point of view of both n equals 1 superfields, and plus some additional constraints. And it'll be easier just to write them up here. So when I write them, V will involve this will be some complex structure modulus. It's an NSNS field. I'll, of course, have my fermions. And sigma. This is the self-dual part of the gauge field. And then I have a set of auxiliary fields. These are all the fields of the on-shell n equals 2 vector multiplet. But these are the auxiliary fields. Now, since Q takes ns to R, these come by acting successively with the spacetime supersymmetries. I can say that Vi is NSNS. F is a Ramon-Ramon gauge field. These are, I can think of these as a SU2 triplet, and the top and bottom components are NS and S, and V plus minus are Ramon-Ramon. And so what I did with John McGreevy, which was done sort of partway in a paper by Vafa, and we sort of completed and dotted the I's and crossed the T's and added some things that needed to be added, was that I can write H plus or minus I dj. So if I have P plus plus minus minus not equals to zero, means that I can expand this in terms of, where this is a basis of H21. So these auxiliary fields, these Novoschwartz auxiliary fields, correspond to flux and torsion. And in fact, this flux will always be of type H3 and 4. This torsion will always be of type W3 and 4. And furthermore, F minus C0H, where C0 is the Ramon-Ramon axion, is D plus minus I. And this would be F34 minus C0H34. Now, before going on to the newer statements, I want to mention something in passing, which is that I can, for example, set D++ not equal to 0 and everything else equal to 0. This means that delta lambda, so the theta, the supersymmetry which generates translations along theta rather than theta hat, is broken. Theta hat Suzy is unbroken. And I claim that in general, the term which breaks n equals 2 to n equals 1 is a superpotential term. To illustrate that, let me break a slightly different combination of supersymmetry to give you something you're presumably all familiar with. Oh, if I want to worry about tadpoles and things like that, absolutely, and compact models, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, I haven't gone into all the issues of tadpole cancellation evading these other theorems. And thinking of these in deformations as deformations, as small deformations at all, it's easier to think about it in the local model. So we'll just do that for the time being. So I actually want to turn on G is equal to F minus tau H. I want some imaginary self-dual. If I write down imaginary self-dual flux, it turns out this preserves the combination theta plus I theta hat. So if I write down my n equals 2 action for the vector multiplets, I can write it down as this double chiral integral of a prepotential. And now I just expand the prepotential out in the auxiliary fields. I'll get something which is d2 theta plus I theta hat gi di times the prepotential. And the prepotential is something that's reasonably geometric. You can show that this leads to the standard Gukov, is a piece of the standard Gukov-Offa-Witten superpotential. Okay. So let me finish up by talking about the hypermultiplets. So the hypermultiplets are chiral from the point of view of one set, the n equals 1 supersymmetry generating translations along theta, and anti-chiral with respect to the other one. So they're sort of four-dimensional versions of the twisted chiral superfields of n equals 2, 2 models. Kinds of. And I can, again, write down an expansion. I'm talking about 2a, or 2b. So in 2b, this is t plus iba. It's a, these correspond to deformations of the Kähler form and the NSNS2 form.
OK, what's the superscript on the first b term?
There is none. Oh, square. Actually, I'm sorry, that's not square. That's d and d hat. And similarly, over here, I don't know what I'm thinking. There are additional constraints, which are quadratic and higher order in d's, but those are the most important ones. And then there's a theta alpha. Sorry. This is twisted chiral, so this is theta bar hat. Theta bar sigma mu alpha theta dot hat mu. And then I have, it turns out I just have a complex auxiliary field. So the question is now how to identify these. And despite what I promised earlier, I am going to say something about the SC3 structure, because it's easiest in that context. So I can write I can always write locally JMN as JI J bar. And this is a singlet of SU3 SO6. I'm going to write deformations of J, which are, I'm going to break this. This index transforms under a 3. This index transforms under a 3 bar. The bar is 1 plus 8. So there's a singlet deformation, and there will be deformations living in the 8 of SU3. And it turns out that it's different torsion classes naturally align with the SU3 structure of the deformation. So the point is, there's also The first thing is actually, I've also got the dilaton. So what we have found to be true, and we are checking in various ways, is the following identification. This funny factor of 3. So all of these torsion classes are correspond to these torsion classes, the half-flat deformations, and these totally holomorphic deformations of NSNS flux correspond to these auxiliary fields. That's a 3. Oh, I'm sorry. There's the volume deformation, the dilaton, and then this. And this seems to pass, at least some, we've gotten this by looking at the variation of the fields in the 10D supergravity theory. It also matches some state claims by Fidanza-Manesian and Topmasiello on mirror symmetry acts on these classes. If you believe them, then it's actually important that these work out. Okay, so I'm. I'll just close with a couple more things. There's a candidate tree-level superpotential for the Kähler moduli, which is interesting when this torsion is turned on. I can write down a variation of factor of I. J plus B for d omega. So you can see that if G, dj and d omega fall, so the torsion classes I'm talking about correspond to non-vanishing dj and d omega. And in particular, you can see how they would give you superpotential terms for the Kähler moduli. As a check, if I let w1 and h1 be non-zero, you can convince yourself that w is some constant times, if I have this and if I have h1, 1 equals 1, so there's one Kähler modulus, I have t, and it's actually minus c tilde over c plus t bar squared. So I actually have a potential that runs away to small volume. Now, at this point, of course, because I'm deep in the interior of Kähler moduli space, you presumably have to include Wilczek and Sintons. And this solves some other puzzles about mirror symmetry and things like that, which I won't have time to discuss in public. And I should also say this matches this, in this case, it matches the supergravity, direct supergravity computation of the potential by Scorrieri and Miku in the supergravity limit. Their actual answer implicitly uses Wilczek and Sinton corrections, although they don't say as much. Okay, but let me step back and say, well, why should we care? So I'm going to imagine a scenario where Suzy is broken by gauge dynamics on D7 brains. So then the superpotential typically will contain some function of, say, the open string fields, e to the minus 1 over g squared. And this will depend on the closed string multiples, and at tree level, it will depend on the Kähler moduli. So it's precisely, in general, and more precisely, this will be the volume of some four cycle. So typically, I expect the associated auxiliary fields to get F terms and communicate supersymmetry breaking to everything else. Now, in at least many of the things I've seen so far, people assume come down, they end up turning on some holomorphic flux, and I believe it comes down to turning on an auxiliary field for the dilaton, or maybe for the volume modulus. So if you only got this, this would be sort of Dolezal domination, I think. But more generally, this is just some force cycle in the Clausius, and there's no reason you wouldn't turn on this or some combination thereof. And then that scenario is in trouble. So you really are going to have to take this torsion into account if you imagine some KKLT-like scenario where supersymmetry is broken in this way. And I suspect this will probably hold for other other models where the gauge dynamics is localized in some way. Well, it's only a problem. It's a problem if you're solving the flavor problem dependent, for example, on Dolezal domination. So the point is that more generally, you're going to have to be a little more careful and make sure that this isn't there. I have some special manifold for some reason. Other effects are more important than these, but you're going to have to take these into account, absolutely. And so I'm just trying to, the goal of this was to make more precise what you need to take into account.
And another natural question here would be understanding the interpretation of F terms in the open stream of the 7 gradient
right.
Combinations of the holomorphic condition. Are you undertaking this? Or?
Not yet. Actually, sort of a next step, once we've sort of sorted out how all these classes fit together, is to, a natural next step would be to look at some particular example, even in a local model where this works out, and see what gets generated and things like that. So it just seems like a natural thing to do.
Do you have any answer to the question, how many possible soft terms do you be on the trying to do?
So, certainly if there's soft terms that come from F terms for open string moduli, I haven't geometrized those. So things like gauge mediation, I certainly am not going to geometrize. But any soft term which of the kind I'm talking, I think any soft term which is induced by some localized dynamic somewhere else, I think you can geometrize in this way. Mm-hmm. Right. As long as things are broken so the first question is going to be, I'm starting with the moduli for what were light fields. And as long as those are sort of the only, as long as I'm not lifting those to the Klutze-Klein scale, then I think what I've written down so far is probably sufficient up to some order. It's sufficient to generate the soft terms that will exist in these.
Right.
I think I can get every kind of soft term you would require this way. Well, I haven't actually plugged the MSSM in here, so I don't know. But certainly I can, and there's probably, if I have some discrete room, there's probably some tuning that I can do. I haven't sat down to plug this into even a toy model yet to see precisely what you would get out. That would be a next step. First, I want to know what I need to plug in, which for me is hard enough. My guess would be yes. I don't know if they would give you a slice. Whether it's phenomenologically nice, I'm not sure about. Right, for 3-brain matter, for 7-brain matter. So, the closest that's come to that was there, not the closest, but an example of someone who tried to do this in a local model was Mariana Grania, who looked at some, I think, these Princeton de Jolly models and turned on various foxes. She only turned on a subset of those, so one didn't get everything. And you want to also, what's important is that in your local model that all of the couplings are somehow tunable. So for just 3-brains, for example, it's often hard to tune Yukawa couplings. Unless you have an orbifold which has some complex structure definitions. So that's going to be part of the game. Does your local model even have, can I get all the couplings I needed for the MSSM in your given local model? And once you have that, then you can ask about what function you're doing. So I think that first order problem is needs to be solved first.